I came back, I've been away on a conference this week, I came back and there's a little note on my keyboard, Pastor Paul, remember that new program I was telling you about that we were going to install? Well, unfortunately you weren't here on Friday, but I installed it anyway. If you have a problem, give me a call. This person knows me very, very well. See, computers are instruments to be used. And when they break down, I have no clue what I'm doing. When there's a new program, and I'm not the only one, thank goodness. There's a new program, what on earth do I do now? Well, as it was, I muddled my way through to a certain point, and then it was all over. We're getting it sorted out, and we're getting there, and what I was really distressed about was the message that I was preaching today was on one object, and I needed to get it across to the other object, and I didn't know how to do it. But we've got it sorted out. You'll be grateful for that, I am sure. If you've got your Bibles there, please turn with me to Mark chapter 6. You know, as the overseas mission team prepare to head away in about 3 weeks' time to Thailand and India, and the reason why we're going is to, on behalf of the church, to scope out, if you like, an opportunity for mission that we will focus on. And we don't know exactly what that's going to be at this point in time. We're going to visit five particular mission initiatives that are already established. They're operating. But we're going to scope them out. And while we're away, we're going to be seeking God on behalf of the church. Say, God, which one of these five, which one of these five are you saying to us, get involved here? So that's kind of the reasons for going. If you remember about 3 or 4 weeks ago, we had Rachel Murray, who's the General Director of Transcend, our missionary organization within the Baptist Union. And Rachel preached a great message and talked about overseas mission. And that was kind of in preparation as well for this trip that's coming up. And I want to pick up on her message from a few weeks ago. So if you've got Mark chapter 6, verses 30 through to 44. Just going to read that out for this morning, for the basis of their message this morning. The apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all that they had done and taught. Then, because so many were coming and going, they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, his disciples that is, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. Hold that thought. So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. By this time, it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. This is a remote place, they said, and it's already very late. Send the people away so that they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat. Verse 37. But he answered, you give them something to eat. Hold that thought. They said to him, that would take more than half a year's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat? How many loaves do you have? He asked. Go and see. When they found out, they said, 5 loaves and 2 fish. Then Jesus directed them to have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. Jesus was very organized, by the way. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples to distribute to the people. He also divided the 2 fish among them all. They all ate, this is really important, they all ate and were satisfied. No one missed out. Hold that thought. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish. So there was an abundance. This is what God does. The number of the men who had eaten was 5,000. Let me just give some context regarding this miracle. Even though Jesus, up to this point, had had a lot of interaction with the nation of Israel, up to this point, and he was clearly going to have some more, but from this point, it marked a a shift in his focus. His shift was more away from the people to his disciples, because he was wanting to teach them. In preparation, he knew that his time was short. He knew that he was coming to a point where he would no longer be with them, and he was wanting to prepare them and empower them. He wanted, in one sense, to make sure that they were confident that God would use them when he wasn't there. Now, when he wasn't there, he was there by spirit, but I'm talking about when the physical Jesus was right. Could you imagine the disciples? They had the living Christ right there with them. Christine, could you come up on the stage, please? This is my wife. I can do this. Let me give you a hand up. She's Jesus, and I'm one of the disciples. And here we are, hand in hand, together. Now, she's about to, don't go, but she's about to go at some point. But he wanted them to know that they were, he was there with them, even though he's physically gone. Thank you. Even though he had physically gone, was not going to make any difference to the fact that Jesus was with them. You see, I know that he is alive because he lives in my heart. I know he's the real deal. I don't need him to hold my hand like you saw me hold Christine's hand, although that would be great. But I don't need that. I just need to know that he is alive and he lives in me. Are you with me, church? Don't know where that came from, but there we go. So he was spending some time with his disciples to encourage and equip them and empower them. That's what he was doing. And the demands up to this point on both Jesus and the disciples had been enormous. The physical and the emotional demands on them had been incredible. In fact, verse 31 says, so much so that they did not even have a chance to eat. Such was the demands on their time. So Jesus withdrew with his disciples to a remote place so that they could have some time of rest, to recoup, much needed rest. Folks, how important is it that we take time out to rest? Really important, isn't it? You know, what I've noticed in my own life is that when I get to that point sometimes when I'm you've worked really, really hard and you're looking forward to Friday night, kind of like the end of the week, so to speak, and you're looking forward to sitting down at home and maybe having a takeaway. You don't have to cook or something. Sit down. If you drink wine, maybe a glass of wine. If you don't, then a glass of water. Who cares? Just ask Jesus to turn it around. He can. And so you're just sitting down and the phone goes. Pastor Paul, da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da, and you have to respond. Ever been there? Well, these folk, this is what was happening for them. And they needed some rest. Jesus knew this. You know, preacher and author Vance Havner said this, if you don't come apart and rest, you'll come apart. Even Jesus in his ministry needed to rest, needed times where he was to find renewal with his father, Joe. Even he needed to do that. And he was the Son of God. Unfortunately, when their boat reached their destination, there was this huge crowd waiting for them. You know, I was kind of smiling to myself about this during the week. You've worked all year. You're planning your end of year holiday, you know. And so you get to your destination, you're with your family or whoever you're with, you get to your destination and you arrive there with all this expectation of getting sit in the motel or putting your tent up or your caravan up, Liz and Pete, whatever it is, and around the corner half the church are hiding. And they pop out and say, surprise! What would you be thinking? Would you be saying to yourself, oh goody. Oh, that's true. That's true. That's true. That's one response. So having experienced interruptions many times in my own ministry, I marvel at Jesus' patience right here. I really do. His patience and grace, because when Jesus saw the crowd, verse 34 says he had compassion. In spite of all the stuff that had gone on before, he looked at this crowd and immediately in his heart he had compassion. And this was not sympathy. Compassion is not sympathy. This is different than sympathy. This compassion was that he was this, the text, if you go below it, says he was deeply and genuinely stirred in his being at what he saw. And I want to say this. To be sure, we do need times of rest and recreation, absolutely. But it is also true, you don't know from one day to the next who God is going to put in your path and is tapping you on the shoulder and saying, essentially, do something. Here's an opportunity right here to be my hands and my feet. You know, you may know this to be true. I certainly do. People that are in need never stop to consider what's happening in your life when they want your help. They just need help. That's all they see. That's just the way it is. And we get to choose. Are we going to respond or not respond? I'm not telling you what to do here. You just get to choose. You have to discern that in the moment. God, are you speaking to me here or not? You've got to work that one out. You know, there are times in our Christian walk that Jesus asks us to go the extra mile, to just do something, to do what we can. He doesn't expect us to do everything, and that's an important distinction. But he does often ask us to do something. In those instances, to walk away and do nothing is not really an option for us. Jim preached a message a couple of weeks ago. You shared some of this kind of stuff where God was asking you, you know. He shared honestly and openly from his heart a couple of instances where, is this all right to share this again, Jeremy? That's good, okay. Where he didn't respond as God had asked him to. But then at another point, he did respond and just how that impacted him. You know, this week, as I said, I was up in Auckland at a leadership conference along with 2,000 other people. It was unbelievable, just fabulous anyway. And I'm having a wonderful time up there. And before one of the evening sessions, I found a cafe somewhere to go and have some dinner before I wandered on down to the evening session. And I had a lovely dinner and time by myself. I think I gave Chris a ring and chatted to her for a little bit. Then I came out of the restaurant. This is up on Mount Eden Road, I think it was. I came out of the restaurant. It was pretty dark along that area there. But here's this homeless man sitting a few doors down with a bag and I think a sleeping bag. And there was I think he had a hat, for people to put some coins in. And so he's over there. And I'm walking here like this and I saw him. And have you ever been in the situation where your focus is that I know I need to get down to the conference because it's starting and I want to be there on time and I want to get a good seat and there is this interruption in your schedule? Hello, everyone out there. And the Spirit of God spoke to me very clearly. Paul, do something. And it just so happens, I don't know about you today, but I don't carry money in my wallet, as in cash. I mean, sometimes I do, but often I don't. Are you the same? I hardly ever carry, especially notes. I might have a couple of coins, but especially notes. But this particular occasion, I had this $20 note, which was my bus fare from Queen Street on the airport Sky Flyer thing to get me back to the airport to catch my flight home the next day. A $20 note that I'd specifically put aside just for that. Guess what? I had $20 in my wallet. Guess what God said to do? Do something. And I didn't. No, I kid you not. I did. And I was able to bend down and talk to him for a while and minister to him as well. You see, I'm not telling you what you should do in that circumstance. That's between you and God. But I know what God told me. I know what God said to my spirit. Paul, you can do something, do something. It was really, it just kind of rammed at home as I was actually preparing this message while I was up there. And it was just kind of, if you've ever had the privilege of preaching, often God will test you on the very thing that you are about to preach about. So if you want to preach in this church, beware. And one of the lessons that Jesus was teaching his disciples was that very lesson right there. You can do something, disciples. You know the story of the Good Samaritan? You know, you all know how that goes, don't you? Excuse me for a second. The story of the Good Samaritan. When the Good Samaritan left home that day, and I suspect he was a businessman going on a journey because he's a businessman and he's going to do buying and selling and doing whatever he does, I doubt very much whether it crossed his mind that at some point on his journey he would see someone that had just been beaten and bloody lying on the road. I doubt very much whether he thought that. But when he saw that, immediately he had compassion. Immediately. And then he responded. In spite of the inconvenience, Jesus was moved with compassion when he saw the crowd. And his compassion led him, and this is the point. It wasn't just that he felt compassion, but then he did something with what he felt, with the compassion that he had. He acted. He moved. He was able to do something, and he did something. You know, to bring this home, what the team are going to witness when we go overseas will move us with compassion, of that I have no doubt. The places that we are going to, I've been to some of these places, some of the team probably haven't, but I know what they're about to walk into. I know what it did for me in my spirit, and believe me, they will be impacted incredibly. But the reality is, church, that we won't be able to do everything. And God doesn't ask us to do everything. He just simply says, do something. Do something. Just start with what's in your hand and do something. And when we come back and share with you what we believe God has told us, my prayer, my hope is that you'll catch that in your spirit as well, and you will be willing to work and walk with us to do something in the years ahead with wherever it is that God is going to ask us to establish ourselves. Anyway, Mark 6, verses 30 to 44, as the story goes, Jesus had been there all day teaching and preaching the crowd. Notice Jesus' strategy. He was preaching and teaching. This in his ministry, all the way through his ministry, this was his strategy. It's not a formula. Don't see it as a formula, but this is the strategy he used, and clearly it worked. He would first preach and teach, excuse me, and then he would begin to minister to people. And I think the reason for that is that I think it's very difficult for people to receive what they don't understand. Understanding is really, really important. So Jesus, this was his strategy. He would preach and teach, and then people's hearts and minds were open to receive whatever ministry was about to happen. So late in the day, dinner time in fact, the disciples wanted to send the crowds away. Now here's a crowd of 5,000 men, it says, but they believe that with the women and children included, probably up to 15,000. So this is a big crowd. This is a lot of hungry mouths. And the disciples must have known that Jesus was well able to deal with this situation, because they had already seen him up to this point drive out evil spirits. They'd seen him heal the sick, including a man with leprosy, which, by the way, was an incurable disease in those days. They'd seen him do that. They'd already seen, and witnessed him heal a paralyzed man, calm a raging storm, and listen to this, raise Jairus's dead daughter to life. They'd already witnessed all of that. Even more so, the disciples themselves had returned from a highly successful ministry trip where they drove out demons, and that were people who were possessed by demons, Mark 6 talks of. They were possessed, not oppressed. There's a difference. Possessed by demons. They'd seen that happen. God had used them in that way and healed many, many sick people. Mark 6, verse 13, if you check it out. Now listen, here's my point. Having experienced all of that, you'd think they'd been pumped up, don't you? You think so? I do. I would have been pumped up, ready to go, point me in the right direction and turn me loose kind of thing. Yet when they saw the size of this crowd, all of their newfound faith went out the window in an instant. It just disappeared. That's unbelievable, I know, and it begs the question, why? Well, we're not told exactly why that happened. But what I do know, and the text bears this out, instead of looking to Jesus for God's solution to the problem, instead of recalling all that they had seen and experienced in ministry before that, how God had used them, they froze. They just froze. They did what we often do, and I'm guilty of this as much as anybody. They tried to rationalize the situation. Check it out. To solve the problem, either they said, send the people away so they can go and get some food, or let's take up an offering. That was their solution. You know, what kind of approach would that have led? That kind of approach would have made an ideal committee in a church. You know the definition of a committee? Should come up on the screen. It should. That's precisely what these guys did. They formed a committee and said nothing can be done. Mind-boggling. Instead of recalling all the great things that God had done through them, probably maybe even the day before, we don't know, it might have been a week before, but God had used them. Poof, gone. Out the window in an instant, as soon as they saw the size of this crowd. And the result was, instead of doing at least something, they did absolutely nothing. Remember I said earlier why Jesus wanted to take the disciples away. It was time out to rest, that's for sure. But he also wanted to teach them. He also wanted to encourage and empower them, because he knew that his time was coming to an end. He knew that at some point he would not be there physically with them, and they were to carry on. That was the commission. He knew that. They didn't know that, or they must have known, but they probably weren't hanging out for it. And he wanted to encourage them and empower them. And even though they said they rationalized the situation, Jesus wasn't about to waste the moment as a powerful faith-building occasion was about to unfold. Watch the disciples' response. Two responses, the disciples and Jesus. Watch the disciples' response. Instead of looking at the situation through the early experience of faith, seeing people delivered of evil spirits, sick people healed, not to mention what they'd seen Jesus do, raising Jairus' daughter, who had been physically dead, raised her to life, and a whole host of other things. Their advice to Jesus was, when he said, what shall we do? Their advice was, send them away. Everyone smile. Unbelievable. And here's my point. You know, church, how easily, and I'm guilty of this too, how easily we can sometimes forget the good things that God has done for us. When we're in a difficult situation, all you do is you focus on the difficulty and you forget what God has done before that. And God wants us to remember, it's in those times that we absolutely do need to stand on our faith, stand on our experience, stand on what the goodness of what God has done before. Because if he did it before, church, I promise you, he wants to do it again. That's the God we serve. If you jump forward two chapters to Mark chapter 8, I'm not asking you to do that now, but you can if you want, but if you jump forward to Mark chapter 8, which was not long after this event of the 5,000, we have Jesus with a crowd of 4,000. Same scenario, except there's 1,000 less, so it's an easier situation. So 4,000 plus all the men, all the women and children there, so maybe 12, 13,000, I don't know. Exactly the same scenario. And Jesus says to them again, disciples, they'd been out 3 days in this particular case. 3 days. And people were hungry. But I'm assuming from that they hadn't eaten anything. It just says 3 days he'd been preaching and teaching, and Jesus said, we need to feed the people, otherwise they're going to fall over and faint. And he says to the disciples, what shall we do, disciples? This is after the 5,000 deal. You know what their response was? But where in this remote place can anyone get enough bread to feed them? Exactly what they said before. After they seen Jesus take 5 loaves and 2 fish and multiply it to feed a multitude of 15,000 people. Not only that, with 12 basketfuls left over. When Jesus acts, he always acts in abundance. Jesus always gives us more than what we require, than what we ask for. You know what the problem is? I don't think we ask enough. We get stuck in trying to rationalize the situation. Oh, if I do this, if I do that, and this is my problem. I mean, I'm a left-brain thinker. You know, if I do this, this, and this, then that will be the outcome. And God's thinking, foolish boy, just ask me. I've got a better solution than that. Better than yours, Paul. Hello, everyone out there? Yeah, absolutely. Don't fall into the trap of forgetting the good that God has already done in your life. You know, if God did it before, please, someone needs to hear this morning. If God did it before, he's well able to do it again. What's Jesus' response? So that's the disciples. Now, Jesus' response. So you're one of Jesus' disciples, and you see thousands of people, perhaps 15,000 in front of you, hungry. Then you look at what's in your hands. 5 loaves and 2 fish. And these were, in those days, the loaves weren't loaves of bread like we buy from the supermarket. They were just little wee rectangular things, not that big. And the fish were kind of minnows. You know, it wasn't a 100-kilogram snapper. Yeah, that'd be great, wouldn't it? So you're looking at 5 loaves and 2 fish. And probably at this point, the words from the two he had come to mind. Yeah, right. Now, there's a number of kingdom principles that you can glean out of this one verse, but this is the one that really jumps out at me. When Jesus asks us to do something, all he asks is that we simply do what we can. That's it. Do what you can with what you've got. Paul, you've got a $20 note in your wallet. It's not about the money. It's about my heart response. Could have been a $100 note. I still would have given it. Believe me, I would have. 10. It wouldn't have made any difference because God said, do something. Just do something. With whatever's in your hand. If it had been a $2 coin, I would have given that. Just do what you can. That's all he asks. The rest, church, is simply up to him. Bringing this home and this trip that we're doing overseas, we won't be able to come back here and say, church, we can do everything. But we will be able to do something. We will be able to come back and encourage you as a whole body to jump on board with what we believe God is telling us so that we can do something. A few years ago, I was my very first trip to a place called Kolkata. Anyone been to Kolkata? Yep, a couple of people. And it wasn't the fleshiest parts of Kolkata, it was the worst parts of Kolkata. And so it's a real eye-opener. And it was in this area called Sonangachi, which is the red light area in Kolkata. And there's about 10,000 women, prostitutes, girls and women in this particular area. It's about a 1 kilometre, square kilometre in terms of the size. So you can imagine the whole lot of people together in one space. What do you call that? The intensity, anyway, that thing. There's a whole lot of people in this one space, and these are all women and girls on the line selling their bodies. And there's about 15 or 20,000 men that come through each night, and you can figure it all out for yourself. And I remember one of the people on the team when we had our critique at the end of each day, we would all get down in one of the rooms together and just share from our own heart what we had seen and heard. And as you can imagine, a powerfully emotional time because you've seen stuff that just blows your mind. And I remember someone asking on the team, where's Jesus in all of this? Where is he in that area there? And just on the edge of it, the mission organization we had gone to visit, a place called Freeset, they had rescued 200 women up to that point. And given them a job, given them superannuation, given them health insurance, nothing, they've never ever got that in India because they were the lower caste, education for their children, food for their family, and not just them but the wider family, and these permanent jobs that they had created through business opportunities. And someone else who was in the team says, there's where Jesus is, right there. That's where he is. You see, some years before that, God had said to a couple of Kiwis, a husband and wife, go to Kolkata and go do something. You can't do everything, but go and do something. And they did. Left New Zealand, started up that organization, and at that point there were 200 women who had been on the line who are now no longer on the line. And you know what? It's even bigger than that, because of the change for that woman, who's now no longer having to prostitute herself, but had a job of dignity, getting a good salary, and medical help, and all the rest of the stuff that goes with that package. Not only was that affecting her and her immediate family, perhaps her husband and children, but the extended family as well. It broke the generational curse that was on her life. Because two people decided to leave the comfort of New Zealand and go do something. Powerful thought, eh? Jesus' response. So you see all these people there. You know, how many times have I said to God, God, if you'll give me this, then I'll do that. I'm seeing some people smiling. You know, God, if you'll just do this for me, then I'll do that for you. I'll do something really, really significant if you do this for me. But God says, start with what you already have, and then watch what I can do. Here's my point. It's not in the thought of doing something that God is able to do a miracle. It's when we take the thought and we act on it that the miracle happens. Proverbs 3:27 says, Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in your power to act. When the opportunity is there and that your power to do something, I'm walking out of a restaurant, fully satisfied, Joe, had a lovely meal, and here's somebody who wasn't in my situation, but I had the power to do something. And the Holy Spirit convicted me, and I did something. Please don't look at me, but look at what God was able to do through me. And he can do it through you too. I'm absolutely convinced that the disciples could have performed the miracle. Jesus said to them, "You give them something to eat," verse 37. That tells me that Jesus believed in them. It's just that they didn't believe in themselves. Clearly, he thought that they could do something. You give them something to eat. And they could have, but collectively they didn't. However, fortunately, it was Andrew who found the lad with the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and at least he took action and he brought the young lad to Jesus. Jesus took the little lunch, blessed it, broke it, and gave it to the disciples to distribute to the hungry people. Here's the principle. Here's the lesson. Whatever we give to him, he is well able to multiply it. He just asks that we do what we can with what we already have. Leave the multiplication up to him. God's into the multiplication business. That's what he does. He's just looking for willing vessels to do what we simply can. You see, the nature of biblical faith, if you look at Hebrews chapter 11, is that we believe before we see. Before we see the physical outworking of whatever God is can do or will do. The nature of biblical faith is that we believe before we see. Now, that's not a definition of faith, but a description of how faith works. God speaks, we hear, then we act, and watch what God can then do through you. Hallelujah. Now, I just want to be clear here. I am not advocating for a theology of works here at all. That's not what's going on with the loaves and the fish. It's not a theology of works. It's the opposite, in fact. The works part of it, the feeding of the multitude, was the result of faith. The result of stepping out of the boat and trusting that God's got this under control. If I do my bit, he's well capable of doing his bit. He just asks that I do what I can do. It's the result of faith. Here's my final point. And I think the main point of the text, the main point of Jesus' feeding of the 5,000 and the 4,000. You know, what are we off for time? Oh, we're okay. The 5,000 and the 4,000, some people had originally thought that they were a retelling of the same miracle, but it wasn't. They were two separate events. And this just shows you how consistent God is, because the message of salvation was not just to the Jewish people, but was also to the Gentiles. So the feeding of the 5,000 happened in Israel, outside of Jerusalem somewhere, in that area there. Can't remember exactly where it was, Caesarea or somewhere. Where was it? Bethsaida, thank you. Thank you, Gregory. Wherever that happens to be in Israel, but it was in that... Well, there we go. So you'd know. Yeah. Thank you. So Bethsaida. So, but that was to the Jewish nation. He was showing the miracle to them, and the miracle wasn't just about the miracle, because the miracle always pointed to something much bigger. I'll get to that in a second. So it was to the Jewish people. But when he fed the 4,000, that was in the Decapolis, the place with 10 cities. That was a heathen area, if you like. The area of the Gadarenes, where the Gadarene demoniac was. It was that area. They weren't Jews. Here's my point. Jesus went to the nation of Israel with the message of salvation, and then he took it across the lake to the other area who hadn't heard about him. Same message. Exactly the same message. So the feeding of the 5,000 was not so much about God's ability to satisfy their natural hunger. You see, every miracle that Jesus performed was meant as a sign pointing to something much more significant than the miracle itself. The primary reason for the miracle, here it is, that people would receive a revelation of who he was or who he is. He's the bread of life. And he can satisfy our spiritual hunger. And he says to those of us here this morning who have already received this bread of life, now go and give to others what you've already received. Go and give it out. Give that which you have already received to those that don't yet know. You know, they're outside these four walls, a hungry world feeding on empty substitutes, vacant promises and false hopes. Sherilyn, can you bring the team up, please? Jesus still has compassion on the multitude. He still has compassion on the lost. And he still says to his church, I have the solution to their hunger. I am the solution. I am the bread of life. I am the one. Tell them that I am the bread of life. You know, I said earlier in the notices about Alpha, if you've asked someone to come along, follow up before Tuesday. Say that you'll meet them at the door. Just be there. Do what you can. Just do what you can. That's all you have to do. Let God take care of the rest. After everyone had eaten and was satisfied, verse 42, the disciples picked up 12 baskets of leftovers. God does not ask us to do everything, church. He simply asks us to do something. And the rest is up to him. Andrew came up to me during the worship time. And I believe that God had given him a word that during worship that there's a number of folk here. Well, sorry, that the Spirit of God is just wanting to come into whatever your circumstances are, whatever they happen to be. It may be a physical healing situation, and it might be an emotional thing, maybe a relationship situation, a job situation, a whole host, whatever, that the Spirit of God is wanting to minister to you. God is wanting to feed the multitude, that he's wanting to feed the multitude. It's not me, it's not you, it's what he is wanting to do. And we get to choose. We get to either rationalize that and probably miss God, or we get to say, okay, God, not sure what this is all about, but I trust you enough that you're wanting to minister to me today. I trust that. Step out and give God an opportunity. Give God the opportunity to feed your soul, to feed your spirit. See, the feeding of the 5,000 wasn't just about physical bread. It was, but that was just a teaser for what God really wanted to do. He wanted them to know that he was the bread of life. I am the bread of life, he says. The woman at the well. If I get water out of that well, and I paraphrase this now, I'll walk away and I'll be thirsty again. And Jesus said, oh, hang on a minute. The water that I give you, you will never be thirsty again. It will never run out. That well will never run dry. It's what God promises. When we eventually get to these places that we're going to, I absolutely know this to be true. That we will want to do everything. I mean, my I'm compassionate in that way. And I know the team will be, you'll want to just fix every problem. How many are like me? Want to fix it all? And that's not a bad motivation. I'm not pouring cold water on that motivation at all. But what I am simply saying is, God doesn't expect us to do everything, but he does expect us to do something. Then the rest is up to him. You with me, church? Yeah. So if that word that Andrew had this morning, that the Spirit of God is here wanting to minister to people, please either tap the person on the shoulder next to you if you're comfortable with them praying for you, just do it in your seat that you're standing in, or you're welcome to come down the front. We've got a prayer team here. We'd love to pray for you and with you. Love to do that. And just let God do what only God can do. Like the disciples,